Welcome to Making It Small in Music with Barker and Brasky. I'm Chris Brasky.
Hey.
And Mike Barker is here with me. And
hello, hey.
Is our special guest today. So that's something
like that?
Special. We are here to talk about how to not make it big. We are, my dreams of stardom are dead, and I am a better man for it, because music is, brings so much to my life, socially and artistically, and I even make, you know, a few tips now and then, so.
That's right, and I love playing music. I appreciate the baristas who, you know, at least say they're paying attention.
Well, they have to.
Yeah.
They can't leave while we're playing.
That's right. Right, I appreciate all the feedback that they give us, and even when they're dancing to songs, maybe that we're playing, maybe that are in their heads.
You know, it's performance art.
Yeah.
This is our very first. What is this called? Podcast? Do people even have iPods anymore?
No. It's all streaming on your phone when you're out jogging.
Okay. Well, this is podcast number one, and because I don't think, you know, it's not cool to experiment on innocent folk, we are going to interview each other, and our very special guest for our very first podcast is Mr. Michael Snyder Barker. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
So
hey,
I have known Mike since 1985, 86. We met in college at the radio station, and Mike's a drummer, and so we started working together in a band, and we've been in bands on and off ever since.
Right. Well, thank you for having me today, Chris, and, you know, I believe I also met you at the same time you met me, I'm guessing.
That's an odd coincidence. You know, what are the odds of that?
I don't know, man, I don't know.
So anyway, Mike, tell us about your musical journey. When did you start not just listening, but participating in the creation of music?
Well, long time ago.
In a galaxy.
A galaxy far away. You know, my donor was a drummer, and I just became enamored with playing drums, because they told me I couldn't be a musician. And so
I love how music is so rebellious.
That's right. So I was drawn to just hammering out some beats. You know, I'd hammer beats out on tables, on chairs, in school, on desks, on people's heads, you know, wherever I could. And so that was at a very, very young age, 4, 5, 6.
Wow, you started early. Did you ever start playing a real instrument, or are you still banging on boxes? I mean, a cajon.
That's right. I do like the cajon. I didn't actually purchase my first drum set until I was an Adrian College student. I'd gotten my college loan money my senior year, and so I bought a used drum set for $100.
Good deal.
Yeah, it was a good deal, and it was, you know, it was, of course, worth every penny of it.
Cool. So, at what point, you know, did you become a successful musician? Was this in college?
Still waiting.
So, what was your, you're a drummer, so you kind of need a band. There's not a lot of solo drummers out there. Tell us about your first band.
My first band was a band called the Albino Zoo, which featured one Chris Brasky on the guitar and some vocals, along with a couple other dudes. Jim Maxwell on guitar and Dana Gillen on bass. And
good players.
I had actually graduated from college by that time. When I was hanging out with my college buddies, I was actually in the working world at that time. Yes, it's true. You're looking at me oddly.
Are you sure?
Yes. No, this was not during the time I was a student.
Huh.
And you'd invite me over to the Teak House to play, and I had a, you know, I was an alumni coming back to hang out
so pathetic.
At a fraternity house. I know. I know.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Right.
That was a good time. We were just playing covers and stuff back then. We were not inventing our own ridiculous music.
We were not. And it was kind of fun. And, you know, I remember that one concert at the brewery.
Oh, yeah, we had a gig at the brewery. There were people there inadvertently.
There were people there until we started playing.
Oh.
So, you know, being able to drive the crowd out is one of my specialties.
It is a skill.
Right.
Sometimes you need to get paid to leave.
Right.
So what'd you do after that? Because I left college, so yeah, I wasn't in your band anymore.
Y'all graduated and abandoned me. And y'all left town, and I was living in the same town, and I answered an ad looking for a drummer, and that's where I joined my second band, Blackbird, with a guy named Dave Gillen, who is actually Dana's cousin, and a guy named Dave Roof.
I know Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
He records our stuff.
I know.
How old was he back then?
I think he had just finished high school. So, yeah. You know, here I was, this guy who had graduated college, playing with these kids. But, you know, I just needed the experience. I was, you know, I didn't have the benefit of you know, playing when I was 10 years old.
When like you were that age, right. You had some catching up to do. Fine, old man. Yeah. We'll let you in our band.
I was in my 20s when I, you know, actually joined both first bands. First and second band.
Cool. So, you know, a lot of people, I think, they're in bands when they're younger, and then they just sort of let it go by the wayside. But you are still playing, maybe as much as ever.
For a while I was playing more than ever. But, you know, right now, under the current conditions of the universe.
We're all stuck inside.
Yeah. So learning new skills currently. And just, you know, recording with you and recording with David Roof. And
that's right. You're playing guitar now. You going to give me a little challenge there?
What do you mean, give you a challenge?
You know, you're going to kick me out, take guitar over for yourself, make me play bass or something?
Well, no, you'd have to play the Zen drum.
Ugh. Well, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
You know, I don't know that I can replace all of your experience with my inexperience. And so we'll just bypass that suggestion.
Okay, so, I mean, you're an adult. We're adults here. Not like, you know, those teenagers in our first band. And right. We have to have jobs. And I assume you are not a full-time musician.
That's a fair assumption.
What do you do to pay the bills?
Well, I am I'm a therapist. Mental health, substance abuse therapist.
Well, let me tell you how I feel about that.
I was about to ask.
Really? So you help people, what, addiction, that kind of thing?
And general mental health stuff. Depression, anxiety, ADHD, major mental health issues.
That's a pretty useful thing to help people with. Thanks.
Yeah, and I earned my master's degree in 95, but I had my first job, you know, with my bachelor's degree back in 1988.
So you're just a better therapist than ever. Does being a therapist help you play in bands? Do you get to, you know, de-escalate band conflict and stuff?
Well, you know, my goal is to not start any and not join any conflicts, that is, not bands.
Don't you have a band called No Conflict?
I do have a band. I named that band.
I guess that's not surprising.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times I've been told that some of my lyrics are kind of preachy, but but you know, they're actually, you know,
some of them do sound like I'm in an AA meeting, you know.
they're therapeutically supportive.
Oh, so even through your music, you get to help people, you know, if they're going through a tough time, they can listen to your songs and maybe get a little good advice.
Sometimes. Not all the fucks. Like, Yacht Dot is probably not a very therapeutic song.
That's a little more abstract, I think. So yeah. Do you think, is being a side musician and a therapist a good combination?
I think it's a great combination because, you know, sometimes I deal with some pretty heavy stuff. I don't take light folks' mental health issues. And so, you know, music just helps me find a balance in my world because, you know, I don't know if you know the concept of filling your own cup, but you know, sometimes when your cup is drained by other people, you have to, you know, like through therapy, you give it all, you have all your energy in that cup and it's drained. Music is something that refills my cup for me.
That is beautiful. I never heard of that before. I like it. Music fills up your cup. I think that should be, we should promote music, market music with that tagline.
That's right. Music, it does a body good.
Exactly. Oh, that's so cool. So, you know, you're talking a lot about music filling up your cup and helping people in your therapy and everything. And it's like, was there a time in your life that was difficult and music helped you through it personally?
I come from a very poor family, young man. And some of the times were very tough. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of specific details, but during those tough times, music was always there to lift me up. You know, back in the mid-70s, late-70s, some of that music that I heard, just Kansas, Styx, Boston, you know, Brampton, all that feel-good stuff.
Oh, that is some great stuff. Yeah. Very positive, you know.
Yeah.
You can do it kind of stuff. But yeah, that's what must have been when you fell in love with music before you started creating it yourself.
Well, yeah, I actually fell in love with music from birth. And I popped out of the womb loving music. I mean, I remember
on the womb.
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting for like my fifth or sixth Christmas, like the Beatles, the album where they're sitting in front of that old brick building, that old house. I think it's, I can't remember the title of it.
I don't know.
Yeah. It was like it was more of a compilation, I think. And then, you know, the Monkees was another one of the firsts. And then the Brady Bunch record, Partridge Family record. You know, good stuff.
That is, those are deep, deep cuts, man.
Yeah. You know, watching the Carpenters on television and Lawrence Welk and, you know, Tiny Tim and all those wonderful.
Hee Haw. Did you watch Hee Haw?
We watched Hee Haw growing up. Yeah. So, I mean, I found humor in music when I was a child and as I was growing up, too.
I hear that in your music now a lot. I love the whimsicalness of some of your songs. I think sometimes people get a little too serious, but you don't have that problem. You can. It's part of your palette.
We can call some of them our songs.
Mine are less whimsical and just more sarcastic. So I don't want to brand you with that.
All right.
Your sarcasm is not part of your palette. Maybe that's why we work well together. The hate and sarcasm come from my end.
I have really tamped down the sarcasm. You know, as I've grown as a therapist, I've tamped down the sarcasm.
Yeah, I can see sarcasm is not a good tool while you're in session.
Yeah.
Well, but then after that, you know, you started to become an active participant, making stuff. We were talking about playing out gigs. Tell me of an awesome time, maybe not the best, but a time you want to talk about where you were playing and it was just the best experience?
I think one of my best experiences was playing Cajon in the Dave Roof Trio when he released his CD at Crazy Wisdom Bookstore.
Oh, I have that. Good CD.
It was a packed house, and of course folks were there to see Dave, and the joy in the audience and how much the audience fueled us as musicians was just powerful. Just absolutely powerful.
How do we get those kind of crowds, Mike?
I think you have to be in the music industry and around the musicians for 20-30 years.
And not piss them off. I think that's my problem.
I think that's probably helpful to avoid pissing folks off. It's oftentimes helpful. It's my guess.
Well, why don't you tell us about a terrible gig?
I was playing with a group. I don't remember if it was called Soylent Green or Edgar Allan's Toe at the time. But it was one of those. And that was, I think it was, you were not in either group at this time. But we were, maybe you were, I don't know. But we were playing a set in Britton, Michigan at this little backwoods bar kind of thing. And we got into the second set and they asked us to leave.
I was there.
Oh, you were there for that one? Yeah.
Yes, was there. That
was probably one of my worst musical experiences. It was embarrassing. I don't know that I think we might not have sounded as good as we could have, and we probably weren't playing music that was what they were looking for.
I remember seeing people walk in and then turn around and leave.
That's right. That's right.
I think we were not. Yeah, maybe we needed a little more practice. Yeah, but we are driving customers away.
I know.
So at least we didn't have to do it all night. They forced us to stop. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that might have been a good idea.
So, see, there's a silver lining, man.
That's right. That's right. But, I forgot that you shared that moment with me.
I do remember also there was some time they didn't just ask us to leave. We sat down with the owner. And he trashed us for like a good long time.
Yeah. I
think he was trying to be helpful.
Yeah, I ended up getting to know that guy. He's a good friend of the bass player of one of my current bands, and he says he doesn't remember that at all.
I can't believe that wouldn't have. No, he was giving us a lot of musical advice about what we were doing that was bad.
I know.
I don't remember any of it. I just remember it wanting it to stop.
Right. Yeah, and I think we're better now. I mean, that was, 25 years ago?
We have not been asked to leave in so long.
Yeah, I guess that's an improvement.
I think that is, I have definitely been asked to leave, and not just with you. That was not the only time. I do not blame you, Mike.
I was a pretty inexperienced drummer at the time, so I probably take some credit.
And I do think that is an important bar for an amateur musician. I mean, at what point can you play somewhere and you're good enough that they don't make you leave?
Yeah.
And then maybe the next rung is they actually ask you to come back.
That might be a rung or two above that. I mean, maybe a rung above it is they actually pay you for. Showing up.
Yes, it's a slog.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, that pay, I do not think you could pay your bills with that, but it's at least nice to have some monetary appreciation.
I mean, you don't think we could pay the bills by splitting $25 each?
I think we might have to just busk on the streets where we will apparently live.
Yeah, and people will pay us to leave.
I think the cops will just shoo you along at some point.
That's probably true. But yeah, but, you know, good times and bad times. But well, it's
yeah,
all
but that's the cool thing about that, you know, how much you've grown as a musician and how much our music has gotten better. And right. It's all part of the journey.
It's a learning experience.
So, what are you working on lately?
With you, we just finished the Billy Bob Senior record, and it's post production. It's actually in physical.
Yeah, we have not, CDs.
Yeah, and it's on Spotify. But then we're also working on Barker and Broski presents the Coal Country Heartbreakers, which is Billy Bob's band.
Yep, that'll be and our next got, CD.
We've got 10 songs partially done.
Yeah, 10 songs partially. We need to finish up those next two, maybe Monday. We'll work on them on Monday.
And then with David Roof, I'm going to his place tomorrow, and we're going to figure out if we need to do anything else on Bark and Roof Tales. And then, you know, mixing and mastering, and I think I'm going to hold off sending that one out for a while. But I also have another song to work on with my friend Mike Rozich, and this one's a real heavy metal kind of song, which is...
You're doing more with Rozich. Awesome.
One at a time, every once in a while, and it Rozich kind of makes me stretch. I'm not a heavy metal fan, but he helps me play drums differently, to a different style.
I really dig your stuff with Rozich. I'm somewhat jealous. I always wanted to be in a metal band, and instead I'm in an acoustic duo. Yeah, you know, you got to roll with what life throws you. But I love it. But I do miss really rocking out hard like you guys.
Well, music is my primary hobby, and so I like the experiences.
Well, you're certainly working on enough projects, are you? And unfortunately, I'd ask you about your live bands too, but as we mentioned, you know, maybe one day they'll be listening to this podcast many years in the future and not realize that all venues have been shut down at this point in history.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we'll get back to it eventually. I mean, you and I have a couple of gigs lined up. Starting Unity Vibrations in their fishbowl.
Yes, yeah. We get to be the boy in the bubble.
Right. Boys in the Bubble.
Yeah. All right. That's our new album, Boys in the Bubble. Good. That way we won't infect anybody with the plague. So where can, if our listeners are interested in hearing your stuff or seeing you perform, you got to, this is your chance to shamelessly promote your music so that you can rise to the level of mildly popular in a local setting.
Well, the best place to find me is at the BarkerandBroski.com website, which is meticulously updated by our web guy.
I need to do so many improvements to that. But yes, it is there, and it will always be there. And then we should have links to everything else. So, you know,
and we
Facebook.
Have a YouTube page and
Spotify.
We're all over the internet. Just, you know, type in Barker and Broski or Michael Snyder Barker, and you will find good, bad, and indifferent stuff.
What a beautiful cornucopia of stuff.
I also put a couple of scratch recordings of me playing guitar and singing on SoundCloud.
Really?
Yeah, there's are about... These... Go ahead.
I was saying, are they new originals, or...?
They are. I mean, a couple of them you've heard, of course, because we're going to put Dancing River on the next... Barker and Broski, Coal Country Heartbreakers tune. And I think you heard, it's not Mystic Rhythms, but it's something else.
Yes, I remember that. I don't remember what it's called either.
Yeah,
but no, either. Good tune.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm liking it.
It's been fun, you know, to learn your language.
Yeah, you know, you've been a drummer so long, now you get to be a musician. How does it feel?
I'm a real musician now that I've grown up.
Well, you know,
I heard that I can't be both.
You've got the spirit of music in you. You know, it's just the instrument is just the way for it to come out. So
that's right. That is
right. Awesome. Well, one thing I was going to time this and then I forgot to start the timer when I was recording. Oops. Anyway, I'll edit this out. Did I miss a question we talked about? You know what? I skipped ahead to current projects. I missed one. I was going to ask how your career and your music hobbies work together. What about your family? Are they supportive? Are they big fans? Are they they're grudgingly tolerant?
I think they're grudgingly tolerant. I think they're big fans when something's new, but like my wife, when she's home and listening to practice and hearing the same songs over and over and over again, bored with it. When my kid lived in town, my kid would come out and take pictures of the bands I was in, Ebb Tide and Sunday Morning Light and a couple Very other cool. ones. And that was nice to have.
Darn kids for growing up and leaving home. Oh. I mean, when they need to stick around and do work, help promote our bands.
I had a nice in-house photographer, which was
that
awesome.
Is cool. I was thinking it with my own wife, it's the same experience. It's like, it seems so cool to be married to a musician until you realize that 99% of it is them practicing songs that they can't play very well yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like that, Jammin' in Joe's Garage by Frank Zappa.
Oh yeah.
Playing that same song over and over.
That is what it is all about, you know? But that's way more fun to participate in than to be subjected to.
Well, you know, somebody told me a long time ago that you got to play the song over and over and over again until you hate it. By then you should know it.
Yes, suck the joy right out of it.
Right.
But at that point, I think, you know it so well that you could just think about other stuff while you're playing.
Right. The baseball game or...
Exactly. It's like, I wonder what I got to go to the store later, I think.
Need some milk, some bread, some eggs. Wait, I need to make this change here. Okay, and then...
I admit sometimes you come out of your reverie and it's like, wait, is this the second verse or the third verse?
Yeah, and especially during rehearsal when you play this song two or three times and kind of forget. Sometimes because you'd already played the parts and then now you're playing them again and you think that I already played this, but I did it last time, not this time.
You know, question, since we are sort of stuck inside, have you been experimenting with any of the online streaming performances, done anything fun with that?
Why, yes, I have, sir. with you, in fact, I've actually been playing guitar and singing at a virtual open mic. I checked another one out. I think I've only been there a couple of times.
Kinda Did hard you do Candies?
Yeah, twice. And it's hard to do two in a week just because I'm pretty busy and I don't really want to.
That's right. Music isn't your job. It's your love.
I know. And sometimes I just want to sit on the couch watching television, practicing scales.
I do the same. TV and scales go well together.
Yeah.
I don't know how well other people watching TV like it, but I figure they could complain.
Well, Carl is at work most of the time in the evening, so not bothering anybody but the dog, who's and the dog's looking at me longingly with a ball in her mouth.
She doesn't like your playing, or...
She would rather, have the attention than me, my giving the attention to anything else.
Really? I thought dogs, aren't dogs good for like playing songs? They howl along and stuff like that.
I wish.
Not your dog, huh? It is not a music connoisseur. No. It is
this
more of a ball.
This dog craves attention, demands it. It's
a high maintenance dog.
He's the most demanding member of my family right now.
Well, I think let's wrap this up. Would anything else you'd like to tell us about how music makes your life amazing?
I already told you about the fill in the cup thing. I've met some amazing people through playing music, through, you know, the in-person open mics that I've attended for going on a decade. I've met some amazing people at gigs. You know, I met an amazing man who, you know, during the pandemic said, you know, at least coming to see you is better than doing nothing.
That's high praise.
That is high praise. Yeah. And, so I think for me, music, you know, I went with another guy to an open mic night, and he doesn't regularly go, and he looked around and said, oh, I see, this is more about friendship than just playing music. Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, and that's one of the things I like about music. I mean, you can definitely at home practice by yourself. You don't need anybody to do anything, but I'm not a very social person, and it kind of forces me to have positive relationships.
Right. That's right. And so like I said, I've met some amazing people, mostly through open mics and some through performances.
I've met some crazy people as well. Well, I guess amazing, you know, you could paint that a number of different ways.
I met Billy Joe Hunt in Jackson when Ebb Tide played a gig there. He came to see us, and we've been friends ever since. You know, so actually a guy came to a show, and we became friends.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Very cool.
It's like music, it's got it all. You know, make friends, be social, be, you know, enjoy it while you're at home.
That's right.
Make $20 at a gig, you know. Woo-hoo! It's all you need.
Yeah, pays for gas and you know, if they throw in a sandwich, that's even better.
Man, if there is free food, that the gig is worth it.
That's right. I don't have to cook that night.
It is, yeah. You're a celeb.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me on this show. I look forward to the next guest. Who is the next guest?
Well, he is a very special young man that you got to be our first guinea pig where I ask questions of you. Mm-hmm. And then we are going to turn the tables. And
now,
next time,
I will announce the next person, since I will be the interviewer.
Sounds
good.
We will
have the fantastic musings of Mr. Chris Broski.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's hard to get me to shut up, but that's good, I guess. And I think what's going to be nice is that, you know, I interview you interview me, we kind of compare notes, and then we'll be prepared. We will be pros at that point and ready to interview other folks.
And we know lots of fun, low-level musicians like us. And some that are even just, you know, a notch or two higher.
Even better, yeah, actually. Which is nice. Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to talk to people who do make a living on it, even though maybe you've never heard of them, but they're local pros teaching lessons and recording and playing out and living the dream, you know? And hopefully...
That's right.
I think after me, I think we're going to get Dave Roof in, speaking of.
Oh, yeah.
Who does make a full living on it. And I got lots of questions for him.
That's right. Right. He is the man that I go to when I don't know something.
Yes. he's an amazing musical resource. So yeah, that should probably be two from now. So yeah, we've got a lineup, and we are listing people. We've got years worth of content about this. So awesome. This was a great first episode. I hope I get it all edited and packaged up. Awesome. And I'm looking forward to doing this.
And I hope you all bring your ears with you next time, too.
Yes, don't leave them at home.